Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Coming up on the programme this week,
people will sort of talk in terms of statistics, or they'll say, well, mental health problems are on the rise. But when it comes to actually reaching out and saying, look, I'm having difficulties with something, that can definitely be difficult.
People had a lot of problems before then. And you know, if they've sort of compounded themselves through the pandemic, then that's obviously deeply concerning as well. They certainly, almost certainly won't have gone away in that time as well. So this idea of a return to normal or normality is a bit of a nonsense, isn't it?
I think if ever you were going to come forward and say, look, I am struggling, actually, now is a really good time to do that. So I would definitely encourage any listeners, now's a good time, really, to speak up about it.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday. Hey everyone, podcast time again. Thank you for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name's Mick Coyle and welcome along. Another conversation on the way in just a few moments' time. I'm recording this at a very funny time, I guess for the nation as such. So this podcast, depending if you listen to them on the week they go out or if you listen at some point in the future, is going out the day after England's Euro 2020 final match against Italy. Now, the podcast is not about that, but it just so happens that obviously I have to record this introduction just before it goes out. So I'm doing so the Friday before, which I normally do, just ahead of the publication going out 6 o'clock on the Monday morning. So you might be listening to this now, and I know some people listen literally from 6 a.m. Monday morning when it goes up. So you'll know the result from last night's football. So you're in a much more enlightened place than myself. It's been a strange old time. Now, I must admit, as a bloke who's nearly 40, I've seen my fair share of England failures. So for me, anything beyond the semi-finals is dreamland anyway. I'm very philosophical. I think Italy are a very good team. So I'm not expecting too much from Sunday, but it would be nice if England win. If they don't, I'll be absolutely fine. But yeah, you're already in that world. You already know exactly what happened Sunday night at Wembley. What a strange place to be. Right, let's crack on with the conversation. Of course, now, in terms of where we're at in terms of the time frame, the Euro 2020 final, reminder, it's still 2021, is this Sunday. But we're then 8 days away from this so-called Freedom Day, this day where we're all allowed to head out and about with no masks and seemingly no rules anymore. None of those protections or restrictions that people had before. A free-for-all for a lot of people, and a lot of deep concern about how that decision has been made and the impact that that will have. That's not surprising. It's certainly something we will come back to as part of the podcast to make sure that people are equipped to deal with it and know where to turn and what to do if they find themselves back in a world which has basically flipped all the rules. All the things you were told that weren't safe, you're now told are safe, but only if you look after yourself in the process. It's going to be a difficult few weeks and I think months to navigate through. So we'll guide you through that as part of the conversations we have here at Mental Health Monday. As ever, join in the conversations on social media. If you're able to tweet to say you listen to the program, love that. Hashtag Mental Health Monday. There's the Mental Health Monday Facebook group as well. It's always nice to see new members on that too. It's no surprising that we've had a difficult time of it, and maybe a little moment this week to reflect on where we're at, because there's a new survey which came out just, you know, a matter of weeks before we head into this new so-called freedom period, which actually sort of establishes some of the vulnerabilities that we feel as human beings through this pandemic. And the social and behavioural psychologist Honey Lancaster-James has been looking at the findings of a new survey talking about people's vulnerabilities, particularly based around their mental health. Something like 1 in 3 feel more vulnerable, but also things like financial circumstances, employment prospects, physical health, which all obviously play an impact in how we feel about our surroundings as well. There's also this idea that actually a lot of people still feel embarrassed to talk about and discuss the issues why they're feeling particularly vulnerable as well. So we'll talk that through with Honey Lancaster-James in just a few moments' time. But it's worth pointing out, as ever, at the end of the podcast, I will signpost you to services that are available in your local area. If you're in a workplace, there may be services open to you there. If you're part of a union, certainly the service, hopefully, through that too. There's national helplines and also local services as well. So if this really resonates with you and maybe someone that you know care about,
Absolutely, support services are out there. I mentioned them right at the end of the podcast. Loads of stuff to come in the next few weeks as well. Some really interesting conversations to come. Keen to start a conversation around women's mental health as well in the coming weeks and months. So much focus we've had on the program and in general, I think, about men's mental health. Men making up 3/4 of suicide figures. But of course, that's still way too many women dying by suicide. Plus, there are issues around things like postnatal, perinatal depression that obviously affects women in high numbers, and a million and one different conversations, which I probably feel we've had in fits and starts, but I maybe want to make sure that we're having that as a thorough conversation here on the program. So if you want to be part of that too, love to hear from you. Email is in the Twitter handle at Mr. Mick Coyle. And as ever, love to hear from you. Right, let's crack on with the conversation. The social and behavioural psychologist, Honey Lancaster-James, is my guest on the programme this week. Actually, as part of the conversation, we'll be talking a little bit about work she used to do, working on a TV show called Love Island. And she's got a really interesting piece of research going on at the moment we'll touch on. But first and foremost, let's talk about that vulnerability report. And I started by, well, saying to Honey that it's no surprise that we are kind of feeling this way at the moment.
Yes, I think so. I mean, we've all been through a sort of a collective trauma, really, and we've all been through such a difficult time. Different stresses, of course, for different people, ranging from loss and family difficulties, but also financial difficulties, employment difficulties, just the general kind of, you know, shutdown of life in general, and the loss of all the coping skills and all the things that make us sort of feel good on a daily basis for many people as well. So it's absolutely understandable that so many of us, I think, have really experienced the stress of that, and that has definitely told in all of the research that's been done around kind of mental health problems on the being on the increase, and in general people reporting that they feel vulnerable. This new survey, for example, that's come out from BT that found that half of Brits, about 56%, are saying that they do feel more vulnerable since the pandemic. And the number one things that they cite are mental health, problems with physical health, financial circumstances and employment prospects. So it has been a really difficult time for people, for sure.
And I think as well, because people almost forget now about how sort of severe the whole situation was right at the start of the pandemic, you know, when suddenly, you know, that working from home thing became reality, the homeschooling became a reality, you know, the threat of the pandemic, the heavy death toll at the time was happening right in front of our eyes. And I think we've almost sort of become used to it now, but right at the start, we weren't used to it at all, were we? It was a shock almost every day. Every news headline was a shock to our mental health.
Oh, 100%. I think you're right. You know, it was quite shocking. I mean, I remember even just personally listening to the Prime Minister telling us, you know, to stay at home and thinking, my goodness, it feels like we've fallen into some sort of dystopian novel, you know. And I think for many people, there has been that element of shock where you just would never have anticipated something like that happening. Certainly nothing that I ever anticipated happening in my lifetime. And I think there has been a level of that. But then, of course, the ramifications of it as things progress, people having to, you know, adjust their home life to cope with homeschooling while working, working from home for a lot of people. For those people who couldn't work from home, having to deal with kind of going out, feeling that they were unsafe, or feeling that, you know, that they had to be constantly mindful about their health. Lots and lots of different aspects of it have been very unsettling, to say the very, very least.
And you mentioned the survey before from BT, but one of the stats that really stood out for me, less than half were keen to share their problems. And it's an interesting stat, that one, because I remember, you know, even at the time, I think we were all sharing our problems, but we were sharing our problems around the practicalities. We were talking about homeschooling. We were talking about dealing with the kids. We were talking about, you know, wearing a mask and how uncomfortable it made us feel, and so on and so forth. But actually, when we were talking about our thoughts and feelings about how that made us feel, maybe we were much less open to discussing that. The mental health side of thing actually became, you know, the taboo and the stigma around it probably maintained itself throughout that time.
Yes, I think it's quite difficult sometimes. I mean, even with mental health being more talked about now than perhaps in the past, it's still difficult for people to actually own that and say, look, I am struggling. People will sort of talk in terms of statistics, or they'll say, well, mental health problems are on the rise. But when it comes to actually reaching out and saying, look, I'm having difficulties with something, that can definitely be difficult. And you rightly sort of, you know, pointed out that the survey covered some of that, because when actually BT asked people why they struggle with opening up or sharing the fact that they're having problems, 63% said it was due to really sort of good old-fashioned embarrassment. Mm. It's that stigma. It's that, you know, lack of comfort with saying, look, I am struggling. And I think, you know, organizations sort of responded to that in ways where they've said, okay, we now understand that actually, even in this climate, you know, when perhaps more than ever before, we can talk about some of the difficulties we have, whether it's a disability, whether it's mental health problems, whether it's financial problems, it's still very difficult to open up and have that conversation. And I think that's what organisations need to be doing, because it is hard for people to actually reach out and say to someone, look, you know, I'm in financial difficulty, or I'm struggling with my mental health, or I don't know, I'm elderly and I've lost some of my hearing and it's difficult for me to hear you on the phone. All of those different things are so difficult to say.
Yeah, and I think that it's almost, and this isn't to blame anyone, because I don't think we've sort of grown up in life with the training and the knowledge to sort of have these conversations, but I almost feel like the pandemic is a great opportunity, stroke was a great opportunity to open up about our feelings, because we were all going through so much of it the same. I know there's this thing of we were all in the same storm, but we weren't all in the same boat. I understand that absolutely. Right. But actually that thing of going, isn't it a nightmare, you know, having to homeschool your kids while also having to work, while also thinking about where you can get your toilet roll from. You know, it's quite a small step to then say, and you know what? I had a panic attack about it at, you know, 11:30 on Thursday night, or I've really been struggling to get out of bed in the morning. For those who are in the mental health world, I think they're almost urging people to have those conversations. But like you said, 63% said there was still a sense of embarrassment to raise those sorts of conversations.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right on the fact that, if anything, this has been an opportunity, perhaps more than ever, to feel like you can tell people that you're struggling. And I think we're still in that. In fact, I think the effects of that are going to last for quite some time. And one of the positive things, I always try and take away a few positives if we can, but one of the positive things on that is that it has slightly made things easier, I think, given permission for people to say, actually, it has been a really tough time. I have been affected by this, and it's left me with difficulties, and I want to reach out and ask for help. And I think, if anything, it has been a leveler in that regard, because it doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, what resources you have. Everybody has found it very, very difficult and very stressful. I haven't heard a single person say, oh, this has been brilliant, you know. So from that point of view, I think if ever you were going to come forward and say, look, I am struggling, actually, now is a really good time to do that, because there are various different organizations, you know, from the NHS to other organizations, who are trying to put in place measures as quickly as they can to help people and to respond to their needs. But also, I feel like at the moment, no one's going to bat an eyelid. No one's going to sort of go, oh my goodness, what? You're having problems? You know, it's almost as if you're in the minority if you aren't feeling vulnerable, if you aren't having some form of difficulty. So I would definitely encourage any listeners, really, if you've ever wondered whether you could step forward and say, look, I do have difficulties getting out of bed in the morning, or I do have some disability issues, or I do have physical health problems or financial problems, now's a good time, really, to speak up about it, I think.
I think I dread a moment, honey, where we have a situation where somebody, and I hope it doesn't come from authority, and this is me thinking worst case scenario, where someone starts to use phrases like, well, the pandemic's over now, so let's just get back to normal life. You don't need to worry about those things you were worried about. Because it's absolutely fair to say that actually life wasn't great for a lot of people pre-pandemic. You know, people had a lot of problems before then. And you know, if they've sort of compounded themselves through the pandemic, then that's obviously deeply concerning as well. They certainly, almost certainly won't have gone away in that time as well. So this idea of a return to normal or normality is a bit of a nonsense, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, I don't think we will return to how things were. I think there'll be a new normal. We will normalize because that's what we do as human beings. We adjust and we habituate to whatever circumstances and environments we find ourselves in eventually over time. And I think there will be some undoubted changes, some not so great or not easy, but some for the better. I mean, certain things like, for example, you know, the way we connect with one another. Now there is more of a, okay, it's sped up the process, I think, towards a sort of living in a more digital world, which has its challenges, but it also does open up lines of communication for people who otherwise might be on their own. I mean, even in my own family, for example, I've got elderly parents. My dad is 80 now. And at the start of the pandemic, he'd never made a video call in his life, and he would, you know, wouldn't do his banking online, and he wanted to go to the local shop. And as a result of the pandemic, and I don't live very close to my dad, we got him set up with video calling, and now we speak to him more regularly than ever before because of the ease of that. He's able to now do his shopping online, and he loves it. He's a complete convert. He's, you know, the local supermarket will bring him his groceries, and he sort of thinks this is wonderful now. You know, he can order things online. And it's given him a real sense of independence. And I think if it hadn't have been for the pandemic and us saying, look, Dad, you know, we're not going to be able to speak to you. You know, we're not going to be able to see you for a while. So we've got to get you set up in this. He would have missed out on some of that. So that's just one thing, really. But and I think in terms of connectivity, we do live in an increasingly kind of global world. We tend to live geographically dispersed from one another nowadays. So we do need to embrace those technologies and those ways of staying connected. And I think the other thing is that for some, of course, they have difficulties with that. I mean, my dad, for example, is deaf in one ear, and he finds it very difficult to have kind of telephone conversations. But I think, you know, bringing it back to what BT are doing about that, you know, he's just a great example of that, where now, for example, there are brilliant services out there for anyone who's affected with any kind of sort of accessibility or difficulty that affects them getting connected. You can access these free services that will help you, right from kind of British Sign Language video calling and all sorts of different things that you can get help with. And I think that is a reflection of the world that we're living in, that actually there is more awareness that it is important for us to stay connected, because if we can't access other people, we really become quite isolated very quickly. And I think this pandemic has shown us that actually we need to sometimes be a bit creative about how we can stay in contact with one another.
Absolutely. And actually those things that people have done through the pandemic, you know, things you can take positively into this new sort of normal as well, in a way we don't have to think, thank goodness it's all over. Let's all go back to the way things were. If you did find positives, yeah, then absolutely you can use those positives. Absolutely. Just before I let you go, honey, I've just got to mention, on, of course, social media, people connecting at the moment, talking about a show you've been involved in the past, Love Island, which of course has had very many headlines written about it. But actually it appears to me now that the mental health of contestants, there seems to be much more of a priority than it appeared sort of publicly in the past. And I think people seem to be more sort of mindful of that aspect of the show as it sort of starts out on its new series.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's happening across the board in factual entertainment and in reality TV, not just Love Island. I mean, Love Island have been you know, providing psychological services for many years. I mean, I personally worked on one of the very, very earliest seasons of Love Island in its original incarnation, when it was, I don't know whether you'll remember, but before it was the show it is today, it was a celebrity-based format. And I worked on one of those seasons. And then I don't know who has been working on the most recent ones, but I certainly work in this area a lot. I run a company called Onset Welfare, and we specialise in working with anyone who lives, works, or appears in the public eye. That's what we do. And certainly over the last few years, there has been an increased kind of effort to put in place better measures to look after people's mental health on reality television shows, as one of just one kind of production. There's lots of different productions that involve members of the public. But I think one of the things that we have to get better at understanding is the impact in general of being a public figure, that actually the biggest challenges come after you've been on some kind of show. And that's when you are in the glare of public scrutiny on social media and in the press. And this isn't specific specific to reality TV stars. This is anybody in the public eye, whether you are born into it, member of the royal family, whether you are elected to it, a member of political office, or whether you appear on a TV show. If you're dealing with public scrutiny, we believe that you do need support with that and with your mental health, because it is very, very difficult when people get abuse online. And I call it what it is. We tend to give it cutesy names like trolling and things like that, but actually it's abuse, it's verbal abuse. And we feel quite passionate about that. And I think more needs to be done actually around social media platforms and accountability for the press as well, not just, you know, the production companies who do their best, but actually once people have left these shows and they're out there on social media, that's actually when they need most support.
Absolutely. And it's an issue with football. You mentioned public figures, footballers as well at the moment at the Euros, and the racist abuse that they face as well. I get a sense that it's an issue we've not quite as a society almost got a handle on.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we're doing, so my company on Set Welfare, we're partnering at the moment actually with ARC and Imperial College, doing some research actually into the effects of being in the glare of the public eye, and in particular looking at how we can develop some good therapies and coping strategies for coping with online negativity, excess criticism, abuse online. Because there was this old practice of just saying to people, oh, well, just come off, you know, if you don't like it, get off the platform, or just ignore it if someone sends you a negative comment. But you can't ignore it. You know, your brain is absolutely hardwired to focus in on a perceived social threat, which when someone sends you a horrible message online or a horrible comment, that's what your brain is going to focus on. So saying that was just very invalidating. So we're trying at the moment to develop some evidence-based training in general, not just for public figures, but for anyone online, you know, who needs some strategies for coping when somebody is mean or horrible online and what you can do about it. But I also think, as I said before, you know, I also think the platforms themselves need to be looking into this in more detail as well.
I look forward to hearing some more about that research and what might come from it, Honey. Thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you joining us and talking through some of the findings from that particular report as well. Good luck with your endeavours in that particular field too as well, social and behavioural psychologist Honey Lancaster-James.
Can I just say as well, if any of your listeners want to find out more about that, it would be probably a good idea if they go to Hear For You on bt.com, because whatever their problems are, whatever your listeners' problems are, whether they're financial, accessibility, just feeling vulnerable in general, there's some really great resources there to help you.
Thanks for your time.
Brilliant. Thank you for having me.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.